Well, we are rounding up week 8 already. Thanks for joining me in this. I'm excited that we continue to go on through these things as we talk about intellectual disabilities. I'm going to allow you to hear from Barb again for a segment, and then I want to talk very specifically after she's done. So I'll tell you a little bit about some of the work that the ministry is doing with adult foster care group homes with adults with intellectual disabilities and connecting them with churches. So here we go in creating our congregations of belonging with people of all abilities as we talk about personalized plans for people with IDD.
I will tell you, while there's support needed sometimes for an individual, sometimes there's a family that's also part of the deal. And so there was a child with an intellectual disability, actually was included quite well through Universal Design. Young child, they sort of staffed extra people in rooms, and they had some tools already available that worked well with this child. But this child had put a significant strain on and the care of this child had put a significant strain on mom and dad. So much so that the congregation found out that they weren't sure that mom and dad were going to, that this marriage was going to make it. Mom and dad were exhausted. The child required a lot of trips to therapy. They had no time left for themselves. This was not an only child. There were other children in the family. And this family was exhausted. And it's also sometimes hard for a family to receive that place of saying, we need help. To make that statement sometimes takes a lot of courage. And again, depending on culture, there are a whole lot of factors with that, aren't there, that we discussed. But I think at this point, the pastor had a significant enough relationship with this family that he called them in. And they knew that their child did well at church. They just really wanted to support this family as a whole. So what ended up happening is the pastor had a talk with them and said, look, we would like to designate four families that you would get to know, that would get to know your children, and we want to come over one night a week, or you pick a time on Saturday or Sunday, whatever. We want to provide a date night for you two. And the couple said, no, we don't need that. You know, it's not what, no, it's not important. We're surviving. And the pastor said, stop. Stop. You need to let the church be the church. And this pastor was pretty pushy and said, I don't, at this point, I love you guys. We're going to show up. If you make us, we don't care if you stay in your car in the driveway. We're coming after you, you know, train us with your children and what you prefer. And of course, because they were coming to the child's home, the parents had to know these people and they were screened and all of those important safety things as well. But we're going to come. And you don't have to go away. You can just sit in your car, but we're coming. And sure enough, this pastor was forceful enough because they knew that this couple needed some time together. They just did. And it was a beautiful thing. You know, as a sibling had a choir concert, they had four sets of names that could say, hey, you know, are you free? Or as the team of four heard about the choir concert, they said, let me come and sit with Devin so that you can go to Sabrina's choir concert at school. But they became this larger family that could come alongside. And it was funny because it's really true. The first night the people showed up, that's exactly what the couple did. They were so like, we don't know if we should leave. What's going to happen? They literally backed the car into the driveway and stayed there for 2 hours. But they had 2 hours in the car together to talk and probably worry. After that, it didn't happen anymore. They just got in their car and off they went for their 2 hours of time together. But that church really saw, look, sometimes we need to have a plan for the individual. And they had already done that. They had good things in place for children with intellectual disabilities just as part of Universal Design. This child didn't have a personalized plan when this child went to church. But they had the personalized plan actually around the family because that mom and dad absolutely needed to have some people power to come in so that they could breathe, that they could plan as a couple, that they could delight in each other. It wasn't all focused on just keeping the lid on this boiling pot at home, as it seemed to them. So, again, a little pushy, perhaps, and might not take that tack in some communities, but this pastor felt comfortable in making that statement, let the church be the church, and what a gift. And really, isn't that true? As the couple became more engaged, they were wonderful singers. So they joined the choir, and there were enough people then that knew Devin and could step in so that they could practice their gifts with Devin, and the mom and dad could use their gifts as part of the choir and leading and singing. So another story of how we take puzzle pieces and put them together to make this master jigsaw that's beautiful. So that's a story of a young one. And again, I'll just be fair, there are many times when a congregation does put together a responsive design plan for a child. And it might involve many of the things that I've already talked about for the child. It might involve, having some alternate curriculum, having a certain set of materials in the room. And so it's part of a personalized plan, not just part of what the church already does. Might have taught a lesson to the peers so that they better understand why their friend can get up at a certain point during their Bible story time and they're not allowed to do that. So we sometimes have to prep peers in that setting as well. So those are some of the things. You may be in a church where buddies are already there, or those Insta buddies like I talked about, or maybe that's something that you want to look into to see if that would be a set of people you could raise up that could just join together with that individual and be part of a particular setting. So just in fairness, I wanted to note sometimes we do need plans for children in the church environment. This church just didn't happen to need that. It was the parents who needed support. All right, and then I wanted to talk about this age, young adult with an intellectual disability. I'll tell you a common pattern. I already told the story a few weeks back about Jonathan, about how his mom wanted him to have people who knew it was his birthday. Excuse me just a minute. And how they arranged sort of that social circle for Jonathan. But I wanted to point out a big issue that can happen, especially in that young adult time in certain cultures and communities. I know where I am living, there's a big thing that happens after this thing called high school. Kids leave and they go to college. Often that doesn't happen with persons with intellectual disabilities. That person stays. And so while there may have been significant bonding with peers, programming, people who were together, many times that individual is still here and oftentimes isolated because others have moved on to that college experience or moved away and then they got married. And again, it's just a very challenging time for some individuals. And so I've had the joy of learning from some communities right now is how do we think about that time? How do we create a better bridge into that community as a whole? Because there are so many issues that can surround that young adult time. So I did tell one story. There's another church that I'm aware of that creates a position that's basically one of hospitality. And they train people to come alongside. So this is buddies for young adults. But it doesn't just apply to persons with an intellectual disability. It could be for a person who's a visitor to the church, new to the church, an introvert, a person who just doesn't want to go. They raise up a group of people that form relationship and then go with them into that environment. And this has worked incredibly well for some persons with intellectual disability, partly because we need, again, to find ways to form relationships and those places of belonging within that adult population. So I think that that has been powerful. Another project with young adults and adults has been launched by Dr. Eric Carter and Dr. Bill Gaventa. It's called Putting Faith to Work. And many times after the school season, again, we have some individuals that are looking for a place of employment, and they would contend that church has some wonderful connections to maybe find that place. And so there's a process, and if you go to the Vanderbilt Faith and theology or faith and church community on the Vanderbilt site. If you Google Dr. Eric Carter, you'll find this thing called Putting Faith to Work. And so if that's something that your congregation might be interested in looking at, there's a very wonderful scripted opportunity. And again, it's finding employment, but even more than that, it's using relationships within the church to be able to really get to know this person and then to say, okay, this person really enjoys vacuuming. I happen to know somebody, a friend who owns a hotel. How can we figure this out, right? There's a lot of carpet in that hotel. So it's taking that particular age, that stage of life, and saying, look, we can put some interesting options together. So putting faith to work, finding ways to build that bridge, maybe, again, building relationships anew as an adult within that congregation as opposed to a child and youth. One thing I do want to point out, we have had many congregations come to us and say, well, yeah, but that person really, I know he's a fifth grader, but he's learning at a four-year-old level. Don't you think that we could have that child just stay in preschool? No. First of all, imagine a parent dropping off a four-year-old and you've got a person in there who's much larger. If you have a teen and this person has an intellectual disability who's gifted and caring for preschoolers, absolutely, that person could join as a worker or somebody in that environment. But we do recommend keeping a person with their age mates and adapting within that setting as opposed to stalling out and always being part of that one setting. Again, it doesn't allow for those bonds to form, and also just doesn't seem very appropriate for others dropping off their four-year-olds in that setting. Finally, just wanted to make one comment. Some of us are neighbors to group homes or adult foster care homes, places where you might have persons with intellectual disabilities being together in one place. I'm aware of a church that has a connection with men who live in an adult foster care home close to their place. The individuals come, they're very much part of Bible studies, they go to worship in that space. They don't all sit in one row, they are part of connections with different people in the congregation. This is just individuals who happen to have intellectual disabilities living together, but they are dispersed throughout the community so that they can get to know one another. They don't all pick the same Bible study, they might choose different ones. One serves as a greeter because he has that gift, another often would take offering because he has that gift. So they're figuring out this is not a group of people. These are a set of individuals who are part of our community. One of the interesting things, too, and one of the gifts I believe a congregation can provide, is at one point the members of the congregation were a little bit concerned at the clothing that the people were wearing and had heard things. They were just so glad to be by snacks and food, and they were eating that up. And so that allowed people of the church to go to their home and ask some questions, you know, if they needed new clothes, is there money for that? And found out that there were some things happening there that I would consider, you know, towards that neglect piece that can happen. And so, again, the gift that a congregation can give sometimes is holding places accountable for how they portion out money, who's allowed in that place. But this church became very active in supporting the care for these individuals and calling that team of people that ran that home to task. The gift of having people who can advocate for, come alongside of, and say, look, we don't want them to come to church hungry. We're glad to have food along with everybody else, but these men need a significant breakfast and lunch and dinner and snacks and, you know, whatever. So they were able to support that place. So again, you can find some wonderful spots. You can also find some places where you go, yeah, as a church, we want to step in. We want to promote good caregivers and people who are part of this environment. So never know how churches get involved, but my suggestion is look around your area. Many times there are adults in homes who no longer have family that are part of their lives. They have the caregivers that are part of those living places, but they may not have relationships outside of that. So could you find out? Do you have a group home or an adult foster care home in your area? Is there something that you could do to adopt that home? Could you collect children's ministry offering to supply some gifts on people's birthdays? Could you do a Christmas celebration together? What could you do together with that community, even if the members don't choose to all come to your church? Is there a way that you could build community with that place? I know there are so many opportunities for that and some really creative ideas to try. So just a reminder that sometimes it's good to be involved in that level.
So Barb shared with you some personalized plans that have been great examples within the church context. And I want to tell you about something just a little bit different about, again, kind of the church going out and bringing in people and partnering with adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities who may not otherwise have much opportunity to participate in church. And so if you're in a context where you're thinking, well, we don't actually have that many people with intellectual differences in our ministry setting, maybe it's time your ministry setting goes and intentionally partners with some individuals with intellectual disabilities in your community. And here's a little bit about what that could look like. So this organization is called the King's Table Ministries, and their idea is Thrive groups. And so the process is that King's Table comes alongside to protect and assess and equip. And the churches and the group homes where these adults live choose, coordinate, commit, and encourage one another. And I say that because adults with intellectual disabilities can be some of the most vulnerable people in our communities. And so this organization really comes along to protect those vulnerable individuals so that volunteers and people from the church community who might be getting involved in their lives have a background check, who have some training, who are equipped to really participate well and encourage these individuals rather than to do damage because of what they don't know or what they simply might do wrongly. Because we cannot always control who comes to our churches, nor should we, right? But we want to make sure that if we are allowing people who are in a very vulnerable place, that we are protecting them. And so that by welcoming all kinds of people into our churches, we are not unintentionally endangering someone. And so that's what King's Table is, a ministry that comes alongside churches to help do. And so where this all gets started is getting to know individuals. And so what gets to happen is someone like myself will go into the group home where these adults live with a group of individuals and just say, I want to get to know you so that I can introduce you to some friends at this local church. And so we create a bio of what does this person love to do? What are some things that might upset them? What can they eat? What should they not eat? Right? What's kind of their schedule? What are they learning about? What are they doing? And then we provide that little write-up to the church and the volunteers and say, here's who this individual is. Would you pray for this person? And would you start to get to know them? And then we set the expectations for the group to start to get together. And within the church group, we say you want to always include the staff of the home. So, yes, the people who are living in that home who have intellectual and developmental disabilities, but also the staff members who are the caregivers for them. And so those staff members may not be paid very well. They may work long hours. They may do very hard jobs. And you want to be very encouraging and supportive for them as well and include them in any of the fun that you might be having. And so this fun could be virtual or in person. Sometimes you might only be able to reach by phone or, you know, a Zoom connection or kind of a FaceTime situation. In person is always best. Here's something we have learned, though, is that the numbers should match. So if you're going into a home with maybe 5 adults with intellectual disabilities, you probably don't want to bring a group of 10 or 12 people with you. You want maybe 3 to 6 people so that you kind of match up about 1 to 1, because otherwise you're just going to be an overwhelming force in their space. And we do ask at King's Table that the commitment be for a year to get together regularly, to pray regularly for these people, and to talk to the person who is the director of this program. We call it the Thrive Program. So talk to the director just to check in and see how this is going. A little bit like those community teams we talked about a couple weeks ago. So it's a team of people coming together to really build relationship with adults who live in a group home. And the activity goals, so every time they get together, which should be every month for about a year, the goals are to build relationship and to support those in the group home. And the kinds of activities could be things like doing a service project. It might be some yard work around the home. It might be meeting a need in the home, even building something or fixing something or replacing something. These could be opportunities for spiritual or personal growth or even staff appreciation where you and the residents of the group home together make birthday cards for the staff members or throw a Valentine's party for them or something like that to simply say we appreciate you as the staff as well. Or it could be a church-sponsored event. They come to your church carnival or your summer party or whatever it might be, but that you intentionally go and invite the individuals of this group home to be a part of that, and they have a significant role in it. And it's not just, oh, we'd be glad if you come, but it's, we want you to be engaged in this. How can we help you? What's your role here? Please come and be a part of this. We know you. We love you. We need you to be here. So some ideas for this have been game nights to play board games or yard games, arts and crafts, so reading things, reading a book, reading picture books. You don't have to have people who are readers to enjoy being read to. Music and theater, doing drama together, teaching a skill like painting or putting nails in a board or baking or cooking. You could do gals and guys times. So separate out those individuals by guys and gals and do a girls' night out or a guys' night out or even the guys' night in and a girls' night in or a girls' movie or whatever. Seasonal and holiday themes and Bible study. And I've put a bunch of links in the course material for you to look at where you can see some examples and resources for Bible study and other ways to support spiritual formation with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. But I want to linger on this idea for a moment. Receive the gifts. Stephanie Hubach is pictured here with her son Tim, and she wrote an article called The Gift of People with Down Syndrome, and she shares about her experience interviewing parents of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities like her son. And in this, she talks about asking the question, what are you most proud of about your son that is not just an achievement or a milestone? And this person reported back being struck with the power of that question because of how subtly yet powerfully it reframes what parents should value in their children. And I know that's a theme that we have come across a lot in this course. So Stephanie says she asked that question of parents when she interviewed for her article, and one person's mom replied through tears, just who he is. So much fun, a great sense of humor, kindness, and politeness. And someone else responded, he has relational skills, tenderness, compassion, and a refusal to do anything until everyone is there. He wants to show love and kindness and respect to other people, which is really fun to be a part of. He's very tender, and I love that about him. Another parent chimed in and said, I'd echo that. His heart is more Jesus-like than anyone in the family. Matthew has a better grasp of and a grip on the gospel. And in that aspect, I'm actually in awe of him. He sees people. So Steph Hubach has captured these things, and I would encourage you to read that full article, but this, I'll just leave you with this thought that that opening not only our hearts but our lives is essential to secure lasting change for people with Down syndrome who have historically lived on the margins of society and often on the margins of the church. It's not enough to invite people with differences into our midst. We need to allow who we are and how we function to be transformed by their presence. So I'll end it that way for this week. And I'll see you next week as we launch into the new topic of talking about worship with people living with dementia.